I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
So, John, are you aware that the Earth revolves around the sun?
I am.
And you know that that's called an orbit?
I do.
And you know how long it takes the Earth to orbit around the sun one time?
365 days.
Right. And 365 days is equal to what?
1 year.
1 year. Now, a lot of things can happen in 1 year or 365 days. There's also things that happen like clockwork every year over and over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's things like anniversaries. There's things like, oh, I don't know, birthdays?
Yes, there are birthdays.
And I think our listeners might like to know that someone is celebrating a birthday this month.
By
the time of this recording, yes!
Yes.
It's your birthday.
It is, yes. February 21st is my birthday.
Happy birthday, John.
Yes, I am 46 now. So
yeah, you're still struggling to catch up to me.
I know. I'll always be.
Every year passes and you still haven't caught up to me yet. What's up with that?
I don't know. It's kind of like George Harrison and Paul McCartney. I don't know if it's in like that Let It Be or if it was just a behind the scenes thing that like the movie that was recorded, or it might have been from that Beatles anthology. But Paul always kind of bossed George around. And I think the conceit was, you'll always be 2 years older than me, Paul. Like it was always just like he'll always be the older one. That, you know, they were in their 50s at the time, I think, when that anthology came out.
I'd be quite prepared for that eventuality.
Yeah. So, yes, you'll always be however much older. I think we're just about the same age, but I feel like you're only a couple of, when's your birthday? What month is your birthday in?
October.
So you turned 46 in October, or you turned 47 in October?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. That's okay.
Let's just leave it that I'm older than you.
Yeah.
Damn it.
It is. Age is a really, you know, I think especially nowadays, age is so interesting because I think years and years ago when we were kids, and it probably wasn't this cut and dried, but my
to keep it in the Beatles theme, back then, a long time ago when we was fab.
Yes. Yeah. But I think when we were growing up, you were, and it's also the perspective of a child too, you know, people who are older or older. But I feel like, you know, once you got into your like say 50s, like you were just old. You know, when we were like, you were a grandparent when you were in your 50s or your 60s, and that was the end of it. And I feel like that's how it was. I think nowadays, I think there's a wild fluctuation to how people carry themselves and how people look in their older, as they start advancing in age. And I include myself in that, you know, some people just have really good genes and they're going to look good and what have you as they get older. Some people,
I happen to like my genes. They're black.
Yes.
And you know, black is slimming.
Yes, so. Absolutely. So some of it is physical, like your diet and if you exercise and all that. And some of it is how you carry yourself. And if you stay engaged and are, you know, trying to learn new things and if you're social and all of that. But I don't know, because I run across some people, and maybe because it's my birthday time of year in February here, I've seen other people having birthdays and their ages come up. And I'm either wildly surprised that they're way older than I think they are, or they're younger than I thought they were. You know, there's a woman around here that like kind of sings in some of the bands that I go see. And I found out she's like turning 55 and I'm like, I really thought you were like 35. Like I literally thought she was 20. And I met another couple the other day at this one show and they were like, yeah, we're 48. I'm like 48. I like really thought this one was like 28. Like I really did too. I wasn't saying that to like be polite or be kind. I legit thought they were that young. So some people cry, and then other people, you know, they tell you they're 47 and you're like, ooh, you're like 1 year older than me. And you kind of look about 10 years older than me. That's no bueno. You should analyze your life choices a little better there, my friend. But, you know, again, a lot of it is that. But anyway, I do think about age a lot, probably more than I should. I should probably like let it go a little bit. But I am fascinated with the range of how people look and how they carry themselves as they get into their more mature years, as we can put it. So there you go. But thank you for the birthday wishes. It's a good time. It's a good time. So how are things on your end? What you've been into, what you've been doing these days?
Well, I'm four episodes into Picard.
Yes, I've been seeing you post quite a bit about that on the Patreon page and elsewhere on Facebook and stuff.
It's difficult because, like, you never know. Like, I don't want to do spoilers for people.
Right, of course.
But I just feel like it's the ultimate slow burn and it's taking too long.
Okay.
Like that's my takeaway right now. I think it's just too slow.
Okay. I've been seeing, and again, I'm not a Star Trek guy. I don't have anything against Star Trek. It's just something I never really got into. But obviously in our community, Star Trek's a pretty big thing. And I think in particular, the Next Generation is kind of held up as the best.
Sure.
As the best Trek, and Picard in particular, I think is kind of held up as the best character. So I think there was a lot of excitement about this. And for the most part, the little bits I've seen people express their opinions about it online, it's been pretty positive from what I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good show. I like what they're doing with it from the character perspective. I just think that they're taking too long to get anywhere. The way they're doing it, what I think is going to happen is they're going to build up to some sort of moment, and then that's going to be the last episode of the season, and it's going to be some sort of cliffhanger.
Mm.
And I don't know. It just feels like they're taking too long, in my opinion.
Do you think that is an artistic choice, or do you think it's a not having enough story to tell? And
I don't know. It's probably artistic. It's probably a choice on their part. I mean, every episode is very Arrow-like in that they're doing some sort of flashback.
Okay.
To kind of build up why Picard is where he is in life and why things are going on the way they're happening to him right now.
Mm.
And then they flash forward a little bit.
Okay.
Like, so they're kind of going back and forth. That's why I said it reminds me of Arrow in the way that Arrow used to do that.
Are they flashing back to like when he's a younger man, kind of like, well, obviously young, but I mean like sort
not
of
too young. Yeah.
So are they
post Next Generation?
That's what I was going to ask. Okay.
and to the time of the, basically the event that sends Spock back in time, which is the supernova in the Romulan Empire.
Hmm.
That's where they're going to.
Okay. I see. Yeah. It's, you know, one day it'll happen. I'll probably, you know, fall. I've seen all of the, I'm sorry.
And you're familiar with the Kelvin timeline.
Yes. I know is that the one that's in
the new movie.
Okay. That's what I thought.
That's the new movie.
Yeah. I've seen, are there three?
Yeah.
I've seen all three of them in the movies and enjoyed all of them. I particularly liked the second one, which I think is the one that people didn't like as much. I think that's the one that I liked.
No, Khan. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked that one a lot. I really did. But again, I'm viewing it from the point of view of someone who doesn't have a lot of baggage with Star Trek. So
sure.
I just thought it was like a good, you know, science fiction movie or a, you know, sort of space military space adventure kind of movie, you know? So I just enjoyed it, but I can also see how someone who has a lot tied up in that franchise may not dig it as much. So, but I've enjoyed them. And again, so I could see getting into it, but, you know,
So the event that creates that timeline, the supernova in the Romulan Empire, a lot of Picard is dealing with the aftermath of that.
Okay.
And I'm sure someone's going to correct me and say, no, I'm wrong. It's X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Mm-hmm. From where I'm sitting and what I'm watching, I guess I need to put spoiler tags on this episode. It's the aftermath of that and his trying to rescue Romulans and basically create a way to get the refugees to safety is the past, is the flashbacks.
Right.
And the present is the aftermath of that effort and how and what happened to him and how it impacted his life and where he is now. And I don't know how many years in between mm-hmm. those two events. And so he's dealing with a lot of stuff. And then something drops into his lap that he has, like, he feels it kind of ties it all together and brings forth his feelings of guilt and responsibility for things that happened. And he almost hyper-focuses on this task and is like, you know, I can't fix the other things. I can fix this. I've talked before about, you know, the guys at work in the IT department. There's one guy in there who said to me, I can't watch that show because they're trying to make an 80-year-old a fucking action hero and it just doesn't work for me. He's 80 fucking years old.
That's how old Patrick Stewart is.
Well, that's what he keeps saying.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, he's an old man. I don't believe that there's an explosion 10 feet away from him and he survives it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that he's able to fight Romulans and attack squads and be able, like, I don't believe it. I can't believe mm-hmm. it. So at least some people are cynical.
Right.
And are having some problems with the action sequences of the show. Which is interesting to me.
You know, I have not seen it yet, but I've heard it spoken about on some other podcasts that I listen to. I haven't seen it. Have you seen The Irishman? That's like the Netflix movie with, like, I guess it's Scorsese and it's like Robert De Niro and all.
De Niro, yeah. And all those. Yeah, I have not seen it. I've seen the ads for it. My brother really wants to watch it. So I don't even tell him that I have Netflix because I don't want to deal with it.
I totally understand. One of the things that I've heard pop up about that movie is they use the de-aging technology on. I guess there's multiple, like, you know, time frames within the movie. So I don't know if it's like, I guess it's like De Niro is de-aged to being in his 30s. And it's interesting because I never thought about this. So his face looks good. Like, I think they really got that part of the technology together. However, because it's De Niro acting, I don't know how old De Niro is. I'm assuming he's in his 70s, probably. I don't know. Let's say he's 70. He still has the movements of a 70-year-old man, not a 30-year-old. So I guess there's a scene where he's in a fight and he looks super weird because you have like this 30-year-old face, but the movements are of a 70-year-old man because I guess you could fix that, but that would probably take a lot of work. It's almost kind of like you're probably better off having a body double or something at that point.
Well, and if you remember, that was my hiccup with Captain Marvel with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, remind me.
He's still an older man.
Right.
And he's in these fight sequences, and he was much slower.
Right.
He ran awkwardly. It was like he was already an old man, even though they had him in makeup making him look younger.
Well, that was
and so it just didn't fit well with.
Well, that was the de-aging too for the face, I believe. I think that was.
I don't know if they did that or not. I think they just used makeup and they gave him some hair and they dyed his hair.
You know. I think with that, they probably didn't have to do a ton of work because it wasn't I guess it was significant, but it was more of like a 20 or 30. So he was going from however old Samuel Jackson is now. Let's say he's 60. I'm not sure how old he is.
Wasn't it the 80s?
It was supposed to be the early
90s. Or the 90s?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's 20 years
yeah.
back.
Right. Least. But it's from like a six. Well, yeah. So it's still pretty good. But it's not like, you know, Michael Douglas going from like, you know, 75 to, you know, 28 or however old he's supposed to be when they do that de-aging. Like, that was pretty significant. But of course, with that, he was just like standing around in a boardroom and talking, so it didn't really matter. But that's I thought about that, and that is you know eventually they'll work all that out, and you won't even think about it.
Sure. The other thing that I did end up watching is the entire second season of Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And I had a lot of problems with season one. I'm not on board with the people who say it's not Star Trek. I think you just need to get a life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, but I felt like it was Star Trek. I just didn't connect well with it. I didn't like the captain. I didn't like the mission. I had a lot of problems with all that. And it did get, you know, being the completist that I am, I had to finish season one in order to get to season two, which so many people like Mark Boder, who's one of our patrons, kept telling me season two is great. Season two is awesome. You got to watch season two. So I had to get through season one to get to season two. And it explained a lot of stuff at the end, which is good. It kind of wrapped up that whole thing. And then I feel like season two, they had a checklist of things that they said, okay, here's all the complaints that people had about season one. So let's go through and check them all off and explain everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a little bit contrived.
Right.
But it still kind of sort of worked.
Mm-hmm.
They did explain everything. They explained, you know, well, here's your spoilers for Star Trek Discovery. If you haven't already watched any of it and you haven't read anything about it, here's your spoilers. It's about Spock's adopted sister.
Okay.
And so the first complaint everybody had, well, but Spock never mentioned that he had an adopted sister. This is outrageous. You can't do this. Well, you know, they explain why Spock never talks about his adopted sister. They explain it in the very last episode of season two. The other one, Spore Drive. Instantaneous travel all across the galaxy. Well, but they never mentioned that in any of the other shows. That's another thing that they checked off. You know, it's like, we can never talk about this because of X, Y, and Z. So, you know, they checked that off. So all those things just kind of happened. But season two felt better to me because I think what I didn't like about season one really boils down to the captain of the Discovery, the mission that he's on, the things that he's doing that are so far from Starfleet. And right. it's not that it's not Star Trek. It's that here's a Starfleet captain who is not acting like a Starfleet captain in any way, shape, or form. That's what kept kind of hitting me with it. So they get through season one, and it's almost like a reboot with season two. You know, that captain through the events of season one is no longer part of Discovery. And they're on their way to get a new captain when an emergency comes up and Christopher Pike takes over.
Okay.
And so you've seen the three movies, you know Christopher Pike.
Right.
In Star Trek, the original series, you know, he was the original captain of the Enterprise. He was badly wounded and ended up in essentially in a wheelchair kind of thing. It's like a total life support chair thing. And there's the episode where they reused the original pilot footage to create this whole episode. And you know, he's sitting in the chair and he can basically, you know, the lights, oops, dropping my pen. He can make the lights blink and the sound happen for yes or no. And that's like the extent of his ability to communicate anymore. So that's what we knew of Christopher Pike. And then they added him in the movies and we got to know a little bit more about Christopher Pike. And then now Anson Mount from Hell on Wheels plays Christopher Pike. You've got Rebecca Romijn is number one.
Oh.
The character that Majel Barrett first played on the Enterprise. And then I do not know the name of the actor playing Spock. But he was really good.
Okay,
I enjoyed his character as well. And so they're kind of bringing in a little bit of that original series flavor, but with the original Enterprise crew through Spock and Pike and Number One, and I just thought it was a much better season There were like, it allowed me to see the characters where before they were all kind of overshadowed by this darker character in the Captain of Discovery.
In the recent movies, is Pike in those movies at all? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, he is. So if you remember when Kirk in the very first movie, Kirk gets in the fight in the bar.
Right.
And then the guy comes in and starts talking to him about, hey, I knew your dad, and you know, I think you belong in Starfleet, and if you wanna join Starfleet, you know, you're blah 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 blah. Come to the meeting place, and we'll take you. That's Christopher Pike.
Okay, because for a second I was misremembering. I thought Chris Hemsworth played Pike, but Chris Hemsworth played Kirk. Kirk's dad.
He played Kirk's
dad. And it was like sort of a flashbacky kind of scene in the beginning. Yep. Right.
Yeah, he's the cap, or he's an officer on the Kelvin.
Right.
USS Kelvin.
Okay. That's what I was mixing it up though. For a second I thought he was Pike, but I forgot about that. That's why a little bit.
Yeah, and so that's where the timelines diverge, because in the original timeline, Kirk is born, I believe, on Earth.
Okay.
And his mother and father don't die when he's born.
Mm-hmm.
And the divergent timeline is that, you know, when Spock and the Romulans come back through time and the Romulans attack the Kelvin, like en route, then it ends up, you know, his mother has birth in space, has the baby in space instead of on Earth, and his father's killed in protecting them.
Okay. I don't want to go down a huge conversation with this, but I feel like it bears mention, because I know we do get a little bit of flack for talking about Star Wars so much. But I do want to mention that I haven't been checking the news stories quite as much these days, but I did see that came up that both the Obi-Wan show that's in the works and I believe the Cassian Andor show are both getting pushed back because they're rewriting them. Initially, yeah, there was a lot of doom and gloom about the Obi-Wan, which was kind of misreported, that it was almost like totally shut down. But that was sort of misreported. It was just that they want to make the scripts better. Now, on one hand, I'm very happy that they're trying to put out the best product that they can. And if they see problems, then they're going to try to fix them. So on one hand, I'm pleased about that. On the other hand, now I may veer into entitled Star Wars fan territory here, so I apologize, but it's like, enough's enough already. Can we please like get this shit worked out ahead of time? So, because everything is like, they have to like restart every has any of them just gone completely smooth? I guess the first season of The Mandalorian, I guess, went pretty well. And that just like happened. People liked it and we all moved on. Like, has every movie and every, now all the, like the new TV series now, just about every one of them was like, well, there's a problem, so we're going to have to fix it. Why is there a problem every time? Like, what is going on? We shouldn't talk about this for long, because I'm sure people are sick of hearing me talk about it. But it's like, what's up? Can we please, like, there seems to be a deeper problem.
Have you ever worked under someone like that was your manager that was just a terrible manager?
Sure. We'll say yes.
Have you ever worked for someone who, as your manager, was just a wonderful manager?
Yes.
Okay. So what I think is the difference here is that Jon Favreau is a great manager.
Yeah.
He can run a show. He can run a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got that experience. And so he's sitting there and he's got Dave Filoni with him.
Yep.
And they're doing The Mandalorian and it is running smooth as silk, and they managed to get everything done. I feel like Disney's picking like 1 out of 100 good showrunners or good directors, and then they're not, like, the other 99, they're not picking great, and they're giving these people carte blanche for the most part, which is just blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Considering who they are and what they do, they're giving them carte blanche. And then when whoever it is comes back and says, here's what I've got so far, they're like, oh my God, no, you can't do that.
I don't know. I mean, look, again, this is...
So that's why I go back to, there's no plan. There's no one running Star Wars for them.
But that's my point. Why is there no plan? Like, I think you can... Look, there's tons of entitled Star Wars fans. I think the end product on most of this stuff has been good. And I think you and I would agree with that. I mean, certain things we don't like. But for the most part, I think the product ends up being good. But I think the feeling is that it can be better. And it can be done a lot more smoothly. And a lot of I think that criticism that you just gave of there not being a plan, I think whatever kind of bitching and moaning and whining that Star Wars fans do, you know, beyond like the bullshit, like, I don't like that there's characters of other races or characters who are gay, or like, what, let's throw all that out the window, because that's nonsense, obviously. But if you, in terms of like storytelling decisions, I think it almost all of it can be boiled down to what you just said of like not having a plan. So why don't we get a plan? Why don't we get somebody who has a plan and we all follow that plan?
And it goes beyond just that, John, because you sit there and you look at it and you go, okay, Marvel has a plan.
Right.
Marvel has someone who is planning out everything and doing all these things so they connect. And now, even to the point where not only is it the movies, it's also television and it's the comics now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all under one thing to keep everything running, quote unquote, smoothly. If you look at the Star Wars books, they have someone doing that for the Star Wars books. Maybe it's a team. I don't remember.
It is.
I remember reading something about it.
Yeah, it's Pablo Hidalgo and all those people.
Yeah. So they've got something in place in order to make sure that those things run smoothly and that no one, you know, crosses the streams and that everything works. I don't understand why movies and television are the Wild Wild West for them.
It makes no sense. And it just seems like it's such a waste. It's like, how much money are they dumping that they're then flushing down the toilet? Cause it's like, well, so now, like, let's use the Obi-Wan show, for example. Obviously people are really excited about that one. I am as well. So now this thing gets delayed and it's like, there's no reason for that. Like, why wasn't that worked out from the beginning? You have this thing. It's a timeline people want. It's the actor people want. It's in like, he's like the perfect age. It's perfect right now. Maybe that's what, maybe they're like, they're psyching themselves out with it, but it's like, just get the right people involved and just figure, like, I think for the most part, there is not enough communication between, like you mentioned the story group, but that's Pablo Hidalgo and a couple of other names, which I can't think of right now. I don't think they're consulted really at all when it comes to the movies and the TV shows, which is a real shame because I think that's a resource that they're not using. And geez, maybe like Pablo Hidalgo should be the person in charge of the stories. Now he's not a filmmaker. And I understand that too, because I think the criticism that comes up when I'm certainly not the only person of the opinion of like, put Filoni in charge. All right, Filoni's done animation. Like, I understand. It's like, there's one thing when it comes to story, and then filmmaking's a totally different set of skills that, yes, you need to have someone that understands how to make a movie. I got it. I understand that. But get a couple people that, like, can work collaboratively then, and then be in charge of the whole thing. So maybe it's Favreau and Filoni and Feige. Feige apparently is a big Star Wars fan and he is making a Star Wars movie or series or something right now too. He's not in charge of the whole thing. And obviously he's going to keep doing the Marvel thing, but maybe you put those three in charge and throw Pablo Hidalgo in there. And it's like this team and they come up with the stories. And to your point about the Marvel movies. Yeah. Guess what? They've had some of the directors and writers on some of those projects did leave early on because they did not like that they were being told what to do. I think the example that I think of right away is Edgar Wright was the initial creator for the Ant-Man movie. Because I guess he had, do you know who Edgar Wright is, right?
Yeah.
He does like all, he did like Shaun of the Dead and all those like British movies with Simon Pegg and everything. So he had a real vision for what he wanted the Ant-Man movie to be. And I guess as he was writing and directing it, you know, at some point, I think it was fairly early in the process, but Feige was like, this is not hitting the beats that we need it to. So you need to change this, this, and this. And Edgar Wright was like, well, that's not the movie that I want to make. And then they were like, okay, so we'll see you later and we'll get somebody else. And I think it's Peyton Reed that ended up making that movie. Now you could say like, oh, we squashed Edgar Wright's artistic vision, which may be true. And I love Edgar Wright. I love a lot of his movies. Baby Driver, that's a great movie that he just put out. I love Edgar Wright. But guess what? Maybe the Ant-Man movie that he made wouldn't have worked. You know? So I think we all sort of trust in Kevin Feige. And again, this is nothing new, but it's like, I just saw those stories and I just looked at them briefly and I'm like, you know what? I don't even want to read about it. Like I'm tired
and John,
of the same
John,
story every time.
You can tie this back to Star Trek as well.
Okay.
Because my initial problems with Discovery stemmed from all of the licensing fighting going on.
Yeah.
Because basically Paramount and JJ had the rights to make movies, but CBS and I believe Viacom had the rights to television. And they were very different rights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of why the second Star Trek movie played with the themes from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan so much is because they had the rights to the movie stories and the movie characters.
Right.
And so, you know, that's where they were, that's the kind of the pool that they were playing in. But now they've done a merger. And so CBS, Viacom, Paramount, all the different people who owned the different kinds of licensing rights to Star Trek are all under the same banner again for the first time in decades.
Okay.
And so even though at the time that Discovery launched, this wasn't the case, now they can play with anything that they want in the Star Trek universe.
Okay.
So that's why you've got Christopher Pike on Star Trek Discovery and Spock and Number One, you know, characters from the TV shows can be in Discovery, which, you know, kind of plays a little bit with some of the elements from the movies, like the way phasers work and, you know, the technology and how it looks and the fucking lens flares that I hate that happen throughout Discovery and now in Picard as well, which just annoys the fuck out of me. But that's just a stylistic choice that I guess they're making.
Right.
But you also have they now have a series called Star Trek Shorts on CBS All Access. And these are little shorts, anywhere from 5 minutes to like 15-20 minutes.
Okay.
And these are little short things from throughout the Star Trek universes, you know, and like there's an episode where Spock first comes to the Enterprise and spends some time with Number One. There's a Captain Pike episode, and it's kind of like the Wesley Crusher episode of Next Generation, you know, what are you going to do with the no-win scenario? There's an episode that ties to the events in Picard where, you know, it's called The Children of Mars. So there's lots of different little things like that they can play with too now.
Cool. Yeah.
So the point being, though, they brought it all in-house under one banner, and I feel like they've got a plan.
Yes.
And they're like, they're sitting there going, we have this great property in Star Trek that has a lot of potential and a lot of things that we can do. And the technology is at the point now where we're like, we can do these things under a relatively decent budget, and they look great. So let's play, let's do more things. And they're doing that. And then when you contrast that with Star Wars, you kind of go, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
Like how can CBS, Paramount, Viacom, who, in my opinion, fucked up Star Trek a lot in the last 30 years, with some weird things that they've done, do a better job managing this property and kind of expanding it and playing with it and doing different things than the folks who currently own Star Wars.
Right.
Like, I just don't get it. I don't get why there's such a division between like what they're doing with Marvel and what they're doing with
Absolutely.
Star Wars. So, yeah, there we go. We've ranted about this now for 15
minutes. So let's move on. So actually, I did want to bring up, so I know our most recent Just the Two of Us, we talked a lot about community, and I've seen a lot of our patrons writing about it in our patron only page. Mm-hmm. And I did want to...
Yeah, that was taken very positively.
Yes, and I wanted to update you. I was hoping to get it done and post it, but I did write music for your Babylon 5 song. I did it. So I was hoping... I wanted to update you because I didn't want you to just think like, he's all talk. He didn't do anything with that. He said he was gonna, and he didn't. I did. I just didn't. So I sat down one afternoon over the past couple of weeks, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna see what I can do with this. So I pulled up your lyrics from 2011, and I started writing and working with it, and I got a melody that I like, and I got a chord progression that I like. I do need to sit and work with it a little more because. I like where it is. It actually can't, now it won't come off this way, but it's a more, what's the best way I could put it? It's not a simple chord progression. It kind of modulates a little bit going from the verse to the chorus, which is something that I've done. And I kind of just did it, naturally. It's just kind of where the tune led. And that's something that is kind of part of the way that I write. Like the verse is in G and then the chorus is in F, I believe. And when I was kind of working with it, when I got to the chorus, the melody went pretty high and I was singing it in a falsetto voice. So really basically what I'm saying is I needed to kind of sit down with it and probably tweak where I'm starting the key. So like I said, right now it's in G and F. So I might just need to lower the key a little bit or change the melody around a little bit so that I can sing it more convincingly. Right now it's kind of like there's a pretty big what. So I want to do, I'm not going to do like a full, cause like I'll never do it then. I just want to do like a little me strumming the guitar and singing it because cause that's what I said last time. It's like the writing isn't the hard part. It's like, you know, making these grand orchestrations, which I love to do, but like, I don't know, like back in the day when I was putting all those songs out, I mean, it would take me weeks, if not a month, to put all that together and working a lot on it. And that is just, unfortunately, I hate to say I don't have the time to do it, but it's not where I would choose to spend my time right now. But can I strum a few chords on the guitar and sing it into my phone and pop it up on our Patreon only page? Yes, I can. I just need to tweak the key. Yeah, I was hoping to like try to finish that up because I was hoping to kind of surprise you and pop it on there. But I did do it. So the melody is written. I just got to work with it. And once I do, I will upload it to the patron page and you could take a listen to it and our patrons can take a listen to it. And I did see a couple folks say that they had some kind of like poetry or some verse that they mm-hmm. were doing.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I saw that
so hopefully I'll pop that up. And then if people do start posting some lyrics and stuff, I will hopefully be able to like work a little bit with that.
That's
and
awesome.
Do the same thing. Yeah. It's again, if I'm not concerned about recording perfection or even like my performance perfection, it's like, look, I may, you know, not sing a part perfectly, or I may like have a little stumble in the guitar part, but it's like, I think the whole point is to just like kind of create something, collaborate, put it out there for our own fun. Now, Do I allow myself the possibility of maybe really liking how something came out and doing a more elaborate thing just for fun? Sure. I'm just saying right now that is not the plan. But I was happy to do that. It was fun to just kind of sit there and like bang it out. And hopefully I'll have that up in a couple weeks. I probably just need to sit down with it for about an hour and mess with the key and tweak the melody a little bit. And then it'll just be a matter of, that's so nice nowadays that like your phone, I forget what the name of the app that I was messing around with. I think it's like ASR or something. It records in pretty high quality. And then it's probably something where I would just like then email it to myself and then just upload it to Facebook through my computer. But you might be able to even just share it right onto Facebook. But I noticed with apps like that, it just sort of where it has like sort of the Facebook option for sharing. It's like the only option is to share it right to your timeline. Like you can't share it like directly into a group. And that would be something I would just put on the patron group because, you know, give something a little special to the patrons, but also, most of my friends would give a rat's ass about, you know, me, you know, singing a
singing about Mr. Garibaldi.
Yeah, that would just like be, you know, go over like a fart in church. So, so there you go. But I did want to update you. I, like I said, I was hoping to do it, but hopefully in the next week or two, I will be able to get that up on the patron page, and hopefully we can all. I saw some people commented like, oh, it'd be good if we did something like this and something like, so it seems like the pot is just starting to get stirred a little bit there, and hopefully we can, we can sort of start making that happen. I think that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So, so have you had any other, thoughts about that in terms of perhaps writing or, you know, shared universe or something like that? You know,
I always have thoughts like that, John. I haven't formalized them in any way for you, but you and I have talked about it before. And I don't know how much I've ever put out in the podcast. I don't remember, but the whole reason that my website is thenewuniverse.com is that everything that I write is part of a shared universe.
So you have like the Patrick Hester Cosmere is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. There's connections between everything. And people who have read my stuff, who listen to this podcast, are now scratching their head going, really? How is X connected to Z?
Yes.
Well, they are. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I just, you know,
I grew up in comics. So the multiverse is a huge part of my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny. I just, my friend, one of my college roommates, he just texted me last night and he's like, all right, I'm finally going to do the Sanderson books. Where do I start? I'm like, oh boy. Okay. It's funny because he is actually the person that turned me on to Sanderson 10 years. I don't know how long ago. Elantris, I think, was published 10 years ago. It's probably more than that now. Cause I feel like I saw the 10th anniversary of that book 3 or 4 years ago. Anyway, he bought me Elantris as like a birthday gift like 15 years ago, and he read it and liked it, but never really read any of the other Sanderson. And so now there's all this other stuff out there. And he's like, should I do Mistborn first or should I do Stormlight Archive first? And my advice was, and this is for anybody who's looking to get into Sanderson, you could take it the way it is. I was like, I read the Stormlight Archive stuff first, but I think you're better off starting with Mistborn. That was my advice. You read all those, right? So would you, or did you?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. So I think Mistborn's a better place to start, especially that original trilogy. It's a little more, I like Stormlight Archive better, but those books are damn long, as we talked about, can be shorter.
It's an easier entry point.
Absolutely. Look, if you have it, and this is no spoiler, and I think, again, it's what we talk about when we talk about long fantasy novels. I think part of the length is what will give it its impact sometimes. But if you're an impatient reader, boy, in that first Stormlight book, there's a lot of time of Kaladin being on the bridge crew and, you know, suffering and getting beat as a slave in the bridge crew. It is a lot of that.
And there was three chapters on the time that they actually did get some cotton candy.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, no. So it's it's a long book, and so yeah, I think the Mistborn books are a little more concise and maybe a little more fun too. So I think that's a good place to go. But anyway, we are running out of time, so we'll just end it by saying, patrons, thank you so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. For those of you who would like to back us, go to patreon.com/functionalnerds. If you do $1 a month or more, it helps us out a lot. You get access to that patron only group, which, like, as we've said, is a lot of cool stuff going on there. Now we're kind of just starting with maybe getting some sort of collaborative, creative things going over there. So if that's a thing that interests you, I think that's well worth a couple bucks a month to be involved in that. So patreon.com/functionalnerds. And Patrick, what would you like to end with today?
I actually mentioned to someone recently at work the concept of IDIC, from Star Trek, which is infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And they said that is too heavy a thing to talk about at 4 o'clock on a Friday.
Mm.
And I agree.
Yes, I agree too. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Functional Nerds podcast. If you like what we do, consider supporting us by visiting patreon.com/functionalnerds, telling two of your friends about us, or providing a review on your favorite podcatcher. This podcast is copyrighted by the Functional Nerds podcast, which is Patrick Hester and John Anilio, under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Theme music created by and used with permission of John Anilio. To learn more about the Functional Nerds, visit functionalnerds.com.